But what he wanted me to tell you was not this, of course, it was his concern about the Middle East. He says that the United States should know that things are perhaps moving in a very critical direction in the Middle East. Sadat still is in power, but he may get great difficulties from two directions. One is from within, where he has the support of the army, but younger forces, not but part of them within the army, but also others, are getting more and more critical about what they call his inactivity. The other danger, combined with this, comes from Gaddafi, the Libyan leader, who has money and seems to is a religious fanatic, much more of a nationalist than what Sadat is, and he may get support. Then he gave us another example, Morocco. This impressed me because I remember in 1968, the spring after the Israel-Arab War, I was then a foreign minister and saw the king of Morocco, who was very moderate and explaining things and what not should do. Tito said, based on his information, which came from the king of Morocco, they are now prepared to send soldiers as soon as the new conflict should develop. And I said, this doesn't impress me very much, because if they send soldiers marching from Morocco it's a long way.
It's also a good way to keep them from having a revolution.
But he said, what should they do? He said, you, all of the things you're saying, the Donald, who is the leader of this, the general secretary of this party, just came back from Syria and Iraq when I arrived in Baghdad. He also talked about a new thing building. I said, this doesn't impress me too much. I've heard all this before. But he said, yes, but still, one should know they have more weapons, more radicalism is developing. And finally, there will come a situation where the large number then will be able to endure more.
Yes.
So this should be a reason, if possible, to influence things in the direction of political negotiations. He has been in contact, as I knew, with and had three meetings with Nahum Goldman, the former leader of the Jewish World Congress, but he has almost no influence in Israel, on Goldman, I think.
Goldman has
no
influence in Israel.
No, I don't think he has. But the
good man.
Yes. Well, he had no proposal, but he was deeply concerned. Also, of course, because he knows that should any serious conflict develop, that the region as in the Mediterranean, but that his own country could get into trouble. I don't know what we can do. The foreign ministers, I think, are discussing this matter. Perhaps they can tell us tomorrow if they have.
I also, frankly, let's get that one of that. Roger that. London is
going to be at the bar, Kissinger.
No.
London is going to be a success. The Arabs, this is interesting, the Arabs would have opposed this strongly before, they do not do that now. Ismail, who traveled on behalf of Saddam, even came to Syria and said they would ask the Egyptians to use my influence speedily in Israel, which is in the direction of a more moderate
position.
But they have elections on. They have elections.
In October, I did.
Yeah.
Always there's an election, even hours today or something, and you can't do anything about it. What do you suggest about the Israeli problem, Mr. Chancellor? I have no solution. Do you have any thoughts? What do you want us to do? What do you think we should do? Look, we know that 80% of the oil in the Middle East goes to Europe, and 90% of Japan's oil comes from the Middle East. And we know that we depend on monetary. We know also that whole place blows up. We have a crisis of energy on the enormous proportions, right?
Even if it does not do it, it does that. But
I know.
So no,
that's what we've got to work on, even if it doesn't, that I know. But on the Middle East, let me say, we are, just for your confidential information, we are working both sides of the street as far as in public and private channels. Public and private channels. Is there anything more we can say, Henry, that, to report on that? As we can be very candid with our friends here. But except to say that there's been not much give on either side, really, is there?
That's the difficulty. The Israeli position is impossible.
There's
no account of the historical process of the fight for 3 million Israelis to hold over 100 million Arabs for eternity on their friends' lives and jeopardize the oil supply of both Europe and the United States, impossible for the Arabs to demand that the Israelis agree to their total program as a precondition to negotiation. One of the issues that's been raised in our talks with the Egyptians is that they now say, in addition to withdrawal, which is coming up, there has to be a settlement with the Palestinians. And those are, of course, the most intransigent. And also,
and if you're going to lose, now the intransigent, you're going to lose somewhere.
So they, the both sides, are very tractable. Say a very heavy responsibility falls on the Israelis who have not yet made a proposal that one can even take seriously.
Yeah, but don't let us leave you with the impression that if all is lost, there's nothing to be gained. Listen, I consider the Mideast settlement of the highest priority in the year 1973. I consider it because I think it can be done terribly smoothly. The major powers are being drawn into confrontation. They are assuredly sacred. And we are using our influence with the Israelis as well as the Arabs. I want to assure you, too, we are not Israel's lawyer. We are pro-Israel. We are, because basically for reasons that all of you are quite aware, we want them to survive. But on the other hand, we do not support their intransigent position. I told Mrs. Meyer this. I told her very frankly. I hope you tell her the same thing. She cannot be continued to be intransigent. Israel can let all the Arabs, 100 million of them, for the next 5 years, maybe the next 6, 7 years, 10 years. But in the end, Israel will lose. Now is the time for Israel to make her deal. Israel's ahead. Make a deal now. That's the point. And that's the thing I've told him. And I have not. And I think Henry, I think the Chancellor's telling them that would be helpful. What do you think?
Sure.
Make the deal now. And call Turkey. They'll say, well, we can never do this. We can never give any territory. Nobody gives any guarantee. We can't deal with the Palestinians. And we can't trust the Arabs. We're afraid of the Russians. Let me say this. Israel can let the whole Arab world for the next 5 to 10 years, except for one big enemy, the Russians. If the Russians decide in addition to military assistance and the rest, furnish advisors and or even pilots. Israel has handed. In other words, and putting it another way, without the U.S. 6th Fleet there, without the U.S. holding the rein on the Soviet, Israel's handed. Israel's got to realize this, that this, Israel feels that, well, that America has no choice, that America will support Tom Keller, high water, and if necessary, fight a world war and do so. Now, America ain't going to do that. I mean, American public opinion has very drastically changed on this. It is, there's still a very heavy pro-Israeli sentiment for reasons that you're quite aware of. But American public opinion, now it's not one of saying it's all for Israel. Regardless of how intentional that they are, we will stand by them. We're furnishing them. I mean, we're bringing over, furnishing more planes, we're going to do that. We're going to maintain the balance of power. We will not try to impose a settlement. But Israel has got to be reasonable, or it will lose its support in this Congress, in my opinion. Now, that's talk that none of my advisors want me to make, but I know the political situation in this, and they don't. All of them are just, they read the New York Times and think that the United States will go down the line for Israel, come hell or high water. The United States will not do that. Not at risk of confrontation with the Russians.
Yeah, now, apropos the Russians, Mr. President, since Brezhnev has got the confirmation of his
apparently his power over
it,
over
it is, well, would it not be in his interest to be more cooperative and move together with the United States? Because how could he?
Well, the difficulty with that is this, that both sides, and of course particularly the Israelis, say they don't want a Russian American imposed on them, right? We're talking to the Russians about it, but let's talk very frankly about that. I mean, it's a real tough problem for the Israelis. They don't like us to talk to the Russians about this yet.
But that's one problem, another problem of the knowledge people that may change. But the Soviets have not been willing. The only way a Soviet-U.S. arrangement could work is if both of us ask our respective friends to do things they don't really want to do.
The Soviet has got a pressure to frankly squeeze the Egyptians. The Soviet won't squeeze the Egyptians, and we won't squeeze the Israelis. Not yet. Not yet.
But at any rate, the Soviets have not separated themselves in any discussions we've had with them.
That's right.
From the maximum Egyptian position.
That's right. They haven't given an inch. The Soviets are as intransigent as are the Israelis.
And strangely enough, I think the expulsion of their forces has hurt this, because they had no particular interest in making Saddam look good. So since the expulsion of their forces, the Soviet interest in talking to us about a Middle East settlement has really diminished rapidly.
Well, when you talk frankly about it, I don't really want to leave the impression, though, Atlanta Kenner, it's very important not to leave. That we think it's hopeless. As a matter of fact, we're working on this, as I said, in a number of channels that are not known.
Right.
And we'll continue to, including, we understand the Russian problem.
Yeah.
We understand the Egyptian problem. We understand the Israeli problem. We talk very frankly with them. amazed as always, and basically a spongy mess, and it hasn't changed. Frankly, the reason Israel and Spanish, they are so strong and firm, is that, let's face it, the Israelis are the ablest people in the world. They work hard, they produce more, they'll fight hard, they'll sacrifice more than anybody in the world. And they're up against a lot of very nice people. I say nice, some are very nice, some are not. But what I meant is, well-intentioned people, you know, their Arab friends come in and they do this and that and the other thing. But they haven't got a chance against this tough, united, Israeli complex. You see, that's the problem. So you put yourself in the position to go to my Arab election coming up. So she says to us, well, all right, Mr. President, first we're going to continue to provide the planes and the rest. We've done that because we want to keep our influence. But she said, well, we don't want your men, and so forth. But as far as we're concerned, we'll fight to the last man. You know, they've got that, they'll show it to you. They have that place in Israel where years and years ago, a few centuries ago, where the Israelis fought to the very last. And that is what they think. Now, these are great people. I said, I admire them for their courage and their guts and their resume. And I think they're totally wrong in their strategy, mainly because they aren't seizing the moment. Now is the time when you're up. That's the time to make your deal right to the chances. Don't make your deal later on.
Yeah.
themselves. And so the producers are playing one against another. Even our good friend the Shah of Iran does. So the Shah of Iran, look at the rest of the... Let me give you a good example. Take Algeria. Algeria proceeded to expropriate the French. And so an American company, El Paso Natural Gas, goes in and says, we're going to pick it up. Now, we can't control that from here. We can try. But you see what I mean? That's wrong. That's wrong. How we can do it? First, our own domestic problem is that we've got to bring our domestic companies in the line so that we speak with one voice. And then, all the consuming nations have got to recognize that if we allow ourselves to be picked off and play against each other, we're dead. That's how we should think about that overnight. See what we can come up with. Isn't that a pretty good analysis of it?
Yes, I think the problem is what the relation of the producing nations, of the consuming nations, would be towards the producing nations.
Right.
And at minimum, the consuming nations don't make it easy for producing nations to pick off.
That's right.
One
don't let us take us off. Yeah.
If the U.S. moves in, when the French get kicked out, and the French move in, when when the Dutch get kicked out, and the Japanese move in, and everybody gets kicked out.
Yeah. Well,
which is what they're doing.
Yeah, the Japanese move in place.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a hopeless process, and then we create a situation where, strangely enough, we reduce the incentive for the producing nations to produce oil, because if the prices keep going up, I spoke to the Minister of Production, of oil production, of this of Saudi Arabia the other day.
Very easy. I'll make it brief. Don't say, I want to hear you, not me.